Your brain doesn't know any different between what is real and what is fake. It just really doesn't. It cannot tell the difference. If you tell your brain that what you experienced at the age of 5 and you replay the movie in your head and tell it it's happening now because you're feeling all the emotions, then it's happening now. But if you watch the movie and you rewind and you watch your five-year-old self going through something and you're like, yeah, that was then and this is now, you're actually also demystifying the brain and telling it, hello, this was then, this is now. And so it's not part and parcel of who my identity is in this very moment. It's something that happened in my history. And so because your brain doesn't know the difference, it's language is so important. It's up to you. What are you telling your brain? Like, I'm stressed. What does that mean? What meaning have you given stress? Because you get flustered when you're stressed, your parasympathetic system is on alarm, your amygdala is like in fight, flight, and freeze response because your body is in that high cortisol level of give, give, give. Where do you expect that all to go? Your brain doesn't know the difference. So what is it going to do when you say, I'm stressed, stressed, stressed? It's going to activate everything. Your whole body is just going to give you that response. And similarly to what you're saying, let's just say you have a whole round of things to complete. And then you ran the process in your mind, oh my God, I'm overwhelmed and stressed. Naturally, you're not going to complete your tasks because your body is going to respond to that communication you've given it, even thought alone without, you know, verbalizing externally. And it will do something in a way that it will hold you back from completing the tasks, which again will bring us back to our beginning conversation. It will loop you back into your old patterns. And through those old patterns, you're running the process again. Here, you just look at yourself and like, oh, see, I told you so.
Well, let's start now then. I'll start with a question. So what are negative patterns?
What are negative patterns? Okay, so it's pretty much when people are running a process in their mind and it's so repetitive. So it could be also from conditioning from childhood or trauma or things and people that they've been around over their life or their lifetime. And so negative patterns come up because we're human beings and we tend to gravitate more towards negativity than we do towards positivity. So what tends to happen is we loop in the negative state. So one potential thing that wasn't so pleasant that happened to us, we run that process over and over. It's almost like you're rewinding and replaying a story in your mind. It manifests into something larger, which then can obviously expand into many other things, behaviors that show up. Even patterns, your style of language, your speech, your communication, how you're dealing with the world and how you're dealing with yourself in the world. So negative patterns really can show up in multiple dimensions, not just one thing, but also can come from different other areas of your life, manifest pretty much.
So when we think about negative patterns, I guess in the context of, let's say, a psychologist or CBT or various kind of practices like that, what is the difference? So, I mean, we have practices like NLP, we have, you know, DBT, we have CBT, with all these different labels. Is the phrasing negative patterns just a way to encapsulate those things, or is it an exclusive way of seeing things that isn't related to psychology and different modalities underneath that?
No, I think it can work on either one, part and parcel of that. It does also work on the negative things and the processes that someone might be running. And it also can hone into the psychiatry side of things just to break things down, like the DSM-5. There are certain models that you'd have to break down and see if you fit in those categories. So negative patterns that you might be running could work on either or. There's no right or wrong to say it, but it shows up and it's something to help you understand what's going on for the client. That's the main thing. What is happening with my client sitting in front of me? What processes are they running? How are they perceiving the world that is affecting them? And that's more so also a very holistic approach to understand their life and what's going on for them. Whereas if you look at it from a different perception, more like medicine and conventional, like psychiatry, psychology, it's more analyzing and then medicating symptoms as opposed to diving into those negative patterns.
Gotcha. Okay, then. So let's go through an example. Maybe you could namelessly name a patient or just an example of whatever you have in mind. What's someone that is running a negative pattern? What do you see most often maybe in your practice when it comes to negative patterns?
So a lot of people, well, one particular case, this client of mine loops. So let's say this client comes out of the problem and finds tools and strategies that they begin to use and it starts to work. At some point somewhere, if you haven't dismantled it really well, they panic that they're getting better. And so what tends to happen, they rewind and go back to their old ways. And it's, again, it goes back down to the process that they're running, but the patterns. So my job really when I'm sitting with someone like that is to pick up, what is it that you're afraid of? Or is there a double bind that you're carrying that could potentially sabotage your improvement moving forward? Because you do improve, you do see the improvements, and they do get better, and they do feel better about themselves. But at some point, a trigger or a challenge pops up, and that's the point where it's like a crossroad for me. Have I not tackled something a lot more deeper that's potentially holding them to the negative style that they're running, that they can't move past it? Because we do get challenges. The question is, can you move past it? So, yeah, when I do see the patterns repeating themselves or people looping in bad behavior, and when I say bad behavior, it's bad behavior how they see it, how they perceive it. It might not be bad behavior in your eyes and my eyes, but they see, for instance, withdrawing from the world is called bad behavior for them. Overthinking things and rushing through things. Like, I'll give you a scenario of an ADHD client. Came through with a label, and at the time, the first thing to deliver herself was an identity. I've got ADHD. Please excuse me if I keep interrupting. What did you say?
Right.
Right. So it's like an extension of yourself that you're holding onto to make you maybe feel better about your current identity. When we began to unpack that within a couple of weeks, she came through to one of our workshops, and then we worked one-on-one to hone into that and to demystify the label that she's attached herself to, so she can catch herself. And then before she gets to the challenge where the self-sabotage, I might not be good enough, or the underlying thing that's holding her back, the label is not attached to it. I myself, I'm here in this very moment. I can deal with the situation. I have tools, let's call it EFT, which is a form of tapping, or anything as such. The label isn't a distinguished personality trait that I carry. It's just something I'm running. I run a process a little bit more quicker than everyone else in my brain. I want to do everything and at the same time. And so it creates a bit of panic and exhaustion, not only to me, but towards my family members. And so it's about really unpacking that, Luke, and getting into the core of it. What would happen if you let go of the label and worked on the behavior? When we work on the behavior, how is your life running better and more smoothly? Do you have anything that's holding you back if you were to let go of the label, which is the double bind, you can call it, or the self-sabotage? And then this particular client, this particular case, when we unraveled it a few times, she was able even to sit in hypnosis without her eyes flickering so much because her brainwave started to slow down. And she was able to get from beta to theta and a really deep state of theta, like quite rapidly. Like, you didn't even have to go through the alpha state. She just drops 2-3 levels instantly because she knew how now to exercise and train her brain to focus. And it came back down to herself. Why do you want to do this? And for who? And I think that that's a very strong question that a lot of people don't have the right answers to straight away. They need a process. Sometimes they're doing things for others, which is not a long-term healing. It's not for themselves.
Well, it's very interesting when you see someone looking at a problem. I'm speaking to my own experience here. They see the consequence of an action, not the reason for the action itself. Let's say, for example, when it comes to being emotionally upset by something, and rather than sitting with that feeling, so some people might say sit with that feeling, I'm just using one example.
Yeah.
If you look at the more spiritual side of things, they would say just sit with the feeling, just relax. But then you see the reaction to it, right, which is when I'm feeling emotional, when I'm feeling I can't handle things, when I'm feeling stressed, I then have the thought process in my mind of, Luke, you've had a tough day, you can relax, you can have that bit of chocolate, you can have that junk food, knowing full well that it leads to feeling insecure, feeling chubby and fat and all those different things, feeling unhealthy, not sleeping as well. So you then have this pattern of different things that are going on in reaction to the source of the problem. Is that what you see happen so much to people, where they have a pattern that they run because of something that's happened to them or something that is conditioned in their mind, And they're almost like their whole identity is built around that. It could be people pleasing. It could be alcoholism. It could be, again, ADHD-like proclivities, which, I mean, I think there's many ways to think about that. But I guess the question is, do you see that pattern? Do you see people dealing with the consequences of pattern as opposed to the pattern itself?
100%. And the consequence to the pattern is because they haven't unpacked that pattern and they weren't as gentle as what you just said. You go, for instance, in that scenario of emotional imbalance, let's say, or dysregulation, you were able to talk to your mind and say, well, you know, I've had a long day. It's okay, Luke. I'm at this point. Some people don't know how to do that. They don't know how to have that internal dialogue of self-talk to retrain and calm their nervous system down to say that, you know what, you can have a lazy day. You can have that Snicker bar. You can have this extra sugary thing that, you know, you supposedly don't do. So you're not falling back into your old ways and patterns consistently. It's just that one off and it's okay. And it comes back down to self. When I was just saying before, if you're doing it for someone else, then for how long can you sustain it? But if you're doing it for yourself, you're a little bit more gentle on yourself because then you can just pick up and say, well, hold on. I've had 5 months of a great run. One day is not going to kill it for the next five months ahead that I had planned within 10 months, I'm going to heal. It's okay. I can have a downer because you've already walked 5 steps forward. One step back is not going to put you from where you began. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. A pattern that I used to run, I think I sometimes do, and I think that's the nature of the healing journey, quote unquote, is, and this is what I went through with a psychologist some time ago, about a year and a half ago, was around being, what I'm looking for is a specific word, like almost getting something but not quite getting it. Like longing for something. There's a specific word, I'm not thinking of it, like longing for a feeling, longing for a situation where it's like it's so close, but you can't have it yet. Almost like speaking about food, like you have a bar of chocolate and someone's like, here, have this piece here, but they pull it away from you. Have this piece here, no, pull away from you. I had this pattern from my past. And that pattern played out in different areas of my life where I would get close to something. And it's almost like I would self-sabotage. I hate that word because I think it simplifies a complex situation, or rather it puts a label on something that doesn't need to be there. But in my own words, it'd be self-sabotage, where I get close to something, close to a goal, and then like, oh, well, no, like I can't have that. And I'm sure you see that pattern all the time. So I think so much of, and this is what the psychologist I was speaking with helped me realize, like there was two patterns. That was one of them. And so I started to notice that, say, for example, I start training at the gym, I would start to see myself get in really good shape, and then I'd push myself a little bit harder than what I should, you know, like train 6 days a week, Luke, train 7 days, knowing full well that if you do that, you're going to injure yourself. Don't do it. But I'd do it. And then I'd find myself, my shoulder starts hurting and then I can't train. And then if I can't train, then, you know, you start feeling sluggish and then you start eating bad food. And the cycle continues again, which is then you repeat and repeat and repeat. So I imagine this is a huge thing that you see as well, right? And just speaking to the core of the pattern.
100%, you're on point. I can totally also understand that the word sabotage is a complex word and it is heavy and it's almost like a label. But if you just park the sabotage, the truth of the matter in my belief system, from what I've seen with clients, especially a few recent clients running those patterns, they get to the edge. They're about to, let's say, take on board the whole cake, that will do something to withdraw or overstimulate to also withdraw. So it doesn't matter from which way. Like in your case, let's just say the gym scenario, you're running through the process, you're building yourself, it's a goal. Now you're noticing the achievement, but now I'm going to overexert my body, almost like to bring myself back to say, and I'm going to just say this word, I don't know if it resonates or sits with you, but I'm not deserving. Or the self-doubt. Am I worth this? Is this really me? And it's almost like that self inner dialogue, the self-talk, the reflection, saying to yourself, this isn't you. This isn't your identity. So it's shifting you away from something that you're trying to build in that process. And so then you loop, right? Going back to the old patterns, it looks like sabotage in that language, but in fact, there's deeper levels. It's a deeper layer. It's with my last client, I noticed when we kept unpacking why every time she got to a scenario where she was able to see she's got a good job, she's in corporate, she actually does love what she does, but at one point she wasn't feeling it. The passion had subsided, the drive had disappeared. There was a lot of procrastination running through her, and it came down to self-doubt. Am I deserving? Literally. And I find this a lot with a lot of clients. Do I deserve this? And then when you unpack and go backwards, her upbringing, we go back to the source. What happened then? Mum and dad were neglectful. Mum and dad didn't believe I deserve this, this, and that. But they didn't supposedly say it verbally like that, but they showed up like that. And I'll give you a scenario. In this particular case, there was a train ride back home, and it was late at night. She had to walk home. She's not deserving to be taken care of and to be looked after. And so that stuck in her head because it was a really bad, complicated situation because there was two men there that created and ignite a lot of fear. She had to run all the way home. When she got home and she was explaining this and unpacking it to parents, well, you arrived. There wasn't even that connection. Are you okay? And I'm so sorry. And I shouldn't have left you there. And it was like, okay, you're here. So there wasn't that love and connection to see that you deserve to be loved. There shouldn't be any self-doubt because I'm always there for you. And so it sort of was like planted there. And so when she patterns and then going back five steps and then two steps forward and she's always finding herself behind the word sabotage, it was because there was so much self-inner doubt what was going on because she felt she didn't deserve her high-end job. She didn't deserve her current income, let's just call it as a scenario. But in truth, she does because she worked her ass off to get there. She worked so brilliantly well and she achieved it and she's doing it. She's earning good money and the atmosphere is pretty good compared to other jobs, right? But what is it coming down to? Why are we procrastinating? Why are we running these old patterns? Because every time we notice somebody praises us, we're not accepting the compliment. Something underlays the underlining, which are the childhood trauma, is affecting what she accepts in the here and now as an adult. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. And I think also, and perhaps call me maybe too spiritual in this sense, but it would be a case of sometimes there is a calling, I think, to something beyond what someone is. And procrastination is a tool to guide someone towards that. I think that when the mishap happens is when you can't see, you can't understand your intuition because you're guided by forces outside of you, which is what you're saying, you're doing it for someone else versus doing it for yourself. An example of this is, and I use myself as an example because it's me, so I know about it intimately. Yeah, exactly. So in the past, when I was 18, going to my first job, and I started working in a sales job, I knew I didn't like it. I hated it. It was just not me. It felt inauthentic. Then going into accounting, which is completely not me. And then to other jobs and so on and so on, I always had this feeling of, I don't like this. I hate this. And, you know, when you're younger, I think it's advisable that you go through these jobs because you learn what you do and don't like. But I procrastinate a lot and I create an identity around who I was in relation to these jobs. So an example is when I did a Big Five personality test, I was looking at my results. And I'm like, oh, like I'm all these different things, you know, like because I clicked yes to procrastinating because in my job, I procrastinate. When it comes to things that I love, I could go for 2 days straight researching and learning and be completely obsessed with it. And I think this is important to, as a caveat, when it comes to these things, I don't think procrastination itself is an issue. It can be a signal or a guide towards something. It's when a disconnection from who you are at your core, which I would call, you know, your heart, your soul, your spirit, where it might be, that is when the issue arises because you can't connect to what intuitively is wrong and right for you.
I agree. You're 100% on point. That I cannot fault that in any way because it is the truth. It comes back down to your own inner self. And the reason why some people even procrastinate, it's not just to avoid what the decisions that they cannot make. It's also to avoid them feeling good about the decisions that they can make. It's that yin and yang, you know, if you want to look at it in the spiritual aspect, the black and white, it's that drawing, it's the away from and the towards. And a lot of people gravitate more towards the away because the negative state, that's where we like to hover, supposedly, as human beings, more so than positive. And so it's more like, well, it is what it is. And then you run these processes and then you show up as procrastination. But as you said, and it really resonates well because I'm like that. I'll give you a classic example of this. I'm currently doing a degree in counseling and I thoroughly dislike the degree because I'm studying everything I already know, right? And it just feels as though you're doubling up on information, wasting some time to sit down and reflect again on what you already know. So I'm not thriving. I don't have that driver to stay up all night and read what I already know. So I just sit down, do the assessments, do what I have to do, and just kick it off on one side. Whereas before, for instance, when I was doing my strategic psychotherapy diploma, I thrived. I wanted to read every book that the teacher wanted to give us. I wanted to delve even deeper and ask all the questions. I didn't even sleep at night. I was stacking information to such a degree that I would actually record myself with the information to re-listen, to integrate it so deeply in my mind because I was so fascinated and hungry. And procrastination, for example, is because there's something within the area that you're working on is not driving you anymore, or the passion has died, or you could be running an old pattern that's popping up right now because you're exhausted in some other part of your life and it's showing up in your career or in your health or your weight or your addictions. It could show up anywhere for that matter or all of the places. But it's because there's something underlining you haven't attended to.
Absolutely. And I want to touch on how someone at home can understand how to see this and go through their own version of, I guess, isolating the issue, or in my language, isolating, in a second, but I want to speak to stress. So a part of the pattern I was mentioning before around getting close to something and pulling away, or rather sabotaging in some way. Stress is something interesting to me because it's completely, or rather mostly, from my opinion, self-inflicted. It's something that we bring into our reality as opposed to being brought. I mean, every emotion I think we're responsible for. And, you know, to point the finger at someone else is another issue entirely. But I think stress is an interesting one because it's so spoken about and people will work their asses off and say, I'm so stressed. I'm stressed out. I can feel my body in the tension. And you can use stress as pressure on the system. It can be from anything, right? But stress specifically in relation to work and things like that. How much do you see in the work that you do, individuals have health issues, whether it be, you know, gut issues, long-term issues from constant stress, and helping them to realize that, hey, you're the one creating the stress. There's a part of you want to be sick. There's a part of you want to be unwell because your body isn't calibrated to the goal that you're trying to aim towards. Rather, you don't believe that you're good enough for this. So you have this drive inside you to push and keep pushing, but really deep down, you don't believe you're good enough for it. And that's what caused you to be sick because it's sabotaging. That's an example. Do you see things like that in your practice?
Every single day. The first thing I do when my client walks in is assess them. Not only mentally or emotionally, physically. Can you explain to me, based on the story that you've just discussed, which part of your body might be in pain? What do your blood tests look like? Do you have cholesterol? Do you have diabetes? This is also on my intake form because curiosity, because I also know, being very holistic in my approach with my clients, that every dis-ease in your body, yes, it's self-inflicted. Not many people are going to agree with this right now, and that's okay. All each to their own with their opinion. But I'm going to say from what I've seen, at least 90% is self-inflicted based on the processes you're running in your mind, and your body is carrying it. It's keeping score. Like something Dr. Van Bessel would discuss. But like, for instance, I'll say when they're saying, you know, everything's so hard and life is challenging, these sort of words, the first thing I'll be like, I'm just curious, can you pay attention to your shoulders? Are they tight? Do they hurt? Oh, yeah, I always get a massage and it just never goes away. The language that they're speaking in front of me, the language that they're using, the words that they're saying, like, you know, things like, oh, I can't do this anymore. I feel like I need to die. I hear words like this all the time. Oh, my God, you know, my kids are driving me crazy. My kids are driving me crazy. So just let's look at the language to unpack that for a minute. When they start to speak all this, I highlight this in my work. This is the language that they're saying. Then I start to assess the body. Can we just check in? By any chance, does your lower back hurt you? How do you know? But I didn't come for my lower back. I came because I have a problem at home and I can't communicate with my partner or about to have a breakdown or a divorce, for instance. I'm like, yeah, but the lower back also describes support. Oh, I didn't know that. When they start to process that their language and their mind and their environment is also attached to their body, within minutes, the pain in the back goes while we're having a discussion. And they'll be like, where? And I'm being full on serious. They start to touch, but you just, how? And then when they start to run the process again and think about it, but you know, I don't have the support from my partner. Few seconds, the pain is there again. Because in their mind, they've attached this language and they've given a certain meaning that the brain interprets differently and attaches it to some part of the body, literally. And so when you look at, what, as you were saying, with stress is a self-inflicted scenario. Because why is it that you're carrying so, and I fall into this as well, by the way, I'm not perfect. I do go into this loop sometimes. But why is it that we're so stressed and you're stressed and I'm stressed when what we have right now is so much easier than what they had back then? How? On what basis are you running stress and switching on all these cells in your body and provoking them to switch on all sorts of disease in your body? But you have a car. You have more money than we've ever had in our lifetime. We have less poor people in history now than we had back then. It's also self-inflicted to some degree. Also, I'm globalizing here, so please, for anyone not to be offended, but there are scenarios. But if you look at all of that, you're taking everything too hard, but life has become so easy. Do you know the saying, Luke? Hard times create strong people. Strong people create easy times. And I fault in that. I created easy times for my kids. And through easy times, what does it generate? Weak people. Then weak people create hard times, and those hard times create the strong people. And it's a loop, right? And I fell in that loop. I came from the hard times, and I became a strong person. And I thought, you know, let's bring some children into this world and make it all easy, until I got slapped in my face a few times. And I realized, whoa, these kids think that the world owes them when it owes them nothing. So I had to take a few steps back and reflect, because I created weakness somewhere from my struggle. And that came from stress, supposedly. But when you compare the stress back then, a heavy scenario, to the stresses now, they're self-inflicted. And then that self-infliction creates that switch, and all sorts of diseases come on board. Like, I work alongside a lot of Louise Hay's work and Roby, the Roby chart, which speaks about the body and the mind, and how your thoughts, your language, and your body can speak to you through the alarm system as which it sets off. Things like, which I'll touch base on if you don't mind, cancer. It is a very sensitive topic. It is a very vulnerable state that you're in once you have a diagnosis. But the first question I ask my clients when they come in as cancer patients, what happened before you had cancer? Can you give me 12-month run? And almost every time, no fail, there is some sort of pattern similar to all the other clients that I've had with cancer that switched it on into the body. Very similar patterns, very similar scenarios, very similar grief or pain or a breakup that switched on the cancer within a few weeks or a few months. They discovered a lump or felt unwell, extremely unwell, went to the doctor to get a diagnosis, and then here's the treatment where it begins.
Eddie, wow. And just what you said before around, I think people get caught in a certain way of being, a certain way of showing up, and not realizing the possibility of what could be. An example of this, again, with myself, is I'm sitting here working away and I just feel the tension in my body. And I'm like, okay, I can notice the tension in my body. Is it possible? She's asking a question. Is it possible to have lots of work, have lots of people asking for things from you, and still feel content, joyful, maybe even laughing, having fun. Is it possible for those two things to exist?
150%. Yes. Yeah.
It is. Is it easy? Maybe not for you in the current reality that you're in. For some people it might be, some people might not be. But it is possible. Is it possible to feel the way you want to feel? So I think imagination is a huge part of this. And it sounds so, well, maybe it sounds, this is my projection, but it sounds so etherical to me, or ethereal rather, to be imaginative, to be imaginative. But if we really think about it, and so one part to me is awareness, so understanding what is there. And the second part is knowing that there is a reality in where that can also not be there. And then if you look at that over decades, you create an individual, yeah, it could be myself, could be anyone, who has created a reality based on what they consider to be truths. The truth is that in order to be successful, you need to be stressed out, you need to work hard, you need to do all these different things. And then we have these meta programs from individuals in the space, then we start following them on Instagram, and we have the language and the patterns brought into our world of who we are and who our and what our reality is, and how that reality is exactly the way it's supposed to, because these people who have social proof say it so. An example of this in the entrepreneurial space would be an individual saying, like Gary Vaynerchuk, for example, not saying it's bad, I'm just giving an example. You could just throw a random name on there, saying you need to work extremely hard to hustle in order to achieve in business. Now, that might be true, but the story that someone, for him, right? But also it just might be true in general, right? Let's just say like there's truths and there's falsities of life. There's just 100% there, right?
Yeah.
They need to be doing, I mean, there's, you can look at studies, for example, where individuals who on average work 5 hours more than the average person, they on average got a higher pay, right? So there is a truth there potentially, right? But that truth isn't an extension of your belief system, meaning that if I take on the belief that I have to work hard in order to achieve a certain amount of success, say an extra 20% of income, but then I attach that to working hard meaning being stressed, then that's a whole different belief system. So I guess what I'm trying to say here is that the imagination part is, okay, maybe I need to work hard. And in fact, this week, I just have to work hard. I've got these meetings booked in. I've got these things. I just have to do it. Doesn't mean that it doesn't have to be joyful. I guess it doesn't have to be, I mean, it doesn't mean it has to be stressful. It can be joyful. It can be fun. It can be playful. And this is something I'm saying to myself now, because so much of my work is just like, oh, I've got these things to do. I'm so stressed out. And then I say to my partner, oh, I'm stressed out. Like, just, I can't do this right now. The truth is I could. And there's a reality where there's a balance between the two.
And listen even to the language that you're using. Classic example. Mm. Like, just as you wrap up just that part and you were saying, like, I noticed that I'm stressed and there's so many things to do. And then I tell my partner I'm stressed out.
Mm.
Your brain doesn't know any different between what is real and what is fake. It just really doesn't. It cannot tell the difference. If you tell your brain that what you experienced at the age of 5 and you replay the movie in your head and tell it it's happening now because you're feeling all the emotions, then it's happening now. But if you watch the movie and you rewind and you watch your five-year-old self going through something and you're like, yeah, that was then and this is now, you're actually also demystifying the brain and telling it, hello, this was then, this is now. And so it's not part and parcel of who my identity is this in this very moment. It's something that happened in my history. And so because your brain doesn't know the difference, it's language is so important. It's up to you. What are you telling your brain? Like, I'm stressed. What does that mean? What meaning have you given stress? Because you get flustered when you're stressed, your parasympathetic system is on alarm, your amygdala is like in fight, flight, and freeze response because your body is in that high cortisol level of give, give, give. Where do you expect that all to go? Your brain doesn't know the difference. So what is it going to do when you say, I'm stressed, stressed, stressed? It's going to activate everything. Your whole body is just going to give you that response. And similarly to what you're saying, let's just say you have a whole round of things to complete. And then you ran the process in your mind, oh my God, I'm overwhelmed and stressed. Naturally, you're not going to complete your tasks because your body is going to respond to that communication you've given it, even thought alone without, you know, verbalizing externally. And it will do something in a way that it will hold you back from completing the tasks, which again will bring us back to our beginning conversation. It will loop you back into your old patterns. And through those old patterns, you're running the process again. Here, you just look at yourself, you're like, oh, See, I told you so. That's what your brain is telling you. See, I told you, because you can't handle this load. You can't do so many things simultaneously. Hence why you couldn't complete the task. Now you feel guilty and angry and frustrated and all these other emotions are popping up. But in truth, it's because you believed the language that you used in thought alone. I'm stressed. And so it manifests that. Your body creates that. Similar to another example of this would be hypnosis or anyone else. If you would get a string and a ring and just tie it and hold it up and you just don't move your hand. And it's not magic. And you tell your brain to move it left and right. There are little micro veins within your body that will send a signal into your fingers and make it move left and right or circular motion. It's not magic, but it's the strength of the mind. It goes into your little fingertips. That's how strong your thoughts are. And some people think, oh, you know, it's so magical. No, it's not. It's my brain overpowering any part of my body. The only difference is I'm focused and I know what I'm doing. But a lot of people do the things that they do look very unconsciously. The language that we use, until this day, sometimes I notice that I say things and my husband catches me up. Cancel, cancel. He uses a Jose Silva method. I'm like, cancel, cancel. You're not supposed to say that. I'm like, oh, thank you for reminding me. I loop as well every now and then. You know, you get into that state. And so self-assessing. You also asked the question around what would you do in a stressful state? Self-assess, check in. Is it what I am experiencing really real and worth it? Can I scale it from 1 to 10? Does it deserve to be extremely stressful? And even if it does, can I stay in there for a shorter amount of time as opposed to holding it for a week or a year and then a lifetime and then go to a therapist because I've got all these diseases and I can't move anymore because my body has become so disabled and it's not functioning the way I need? You got to check in every day, every minute. What did I say and what am I saying? Oh, I cannot do this. I tried. What do you mean you tried? Trying means you're not doing anything. You're not taking action.
So on that note, let's go through maybe some steps people can take at home when it comes to negative patterns. And you can use any example for this. It could be negative emotions. It could be negative X, Y, Z, negative stress, so on, so on. What are the steps someone takes? Let's say someone is working and they're feeling stressed every single day. Let's use stress as an example since it's what we all experience from time to time. Let's say someone has a business, or rather a 9-to-5, and they always feel stressed. They always feel under the pump. It's affecting their sleep. It's affecting a lot of aspects of their life. What is the first step? And if there's many steps, then let's go through them. But maybe the first step to undoing that pattern.
The first step I would say is recognize. Recognize where you're at. Notice it. Pick up that, oh my goodness, this is happening in my body. So the first picture would be just to recognize where you're at and the heightened state that you've been pulled into simultaneously for whatever reason. So that would be my first action, is just to self-assess, recognize where am I at. And then the second one is accept that you're in that position. So you notice it really well and accept this is what is happening right now. And then the third part I would suggest is to imagine, because the imaginative state is so grand, as I said before, your brain doesn't know the difference between what is happening now and what is not happening. Imagine you're coming out of your body and just as a third person and face your body and give yourself advice. Literally, because there's no bias when you're outside. When you're inside, you're running all processes. I'm not good enough and I'm not worth this and see, it's happening to me again. And God knows all hundreds of thoughts are coming through, right? But when you're outside and you plan in your head, now that I recognized and I acknowledge where I'm at and I've accepted it, and now I'm looking from a third point of view, I can just advise myself and say, it's not worth it. You could let this go and give yourself some really constructive advice from the outside. What would you tell someone that's going through that scenario? Except now you're saying it to yourself from a different view. So that would be one tool, is having that out of body experience, because when you're so connected in your body and you're feeling all of that, it's good to also rationalize it by expanding it from yourself and just viewing it from all perceptions. Another aspect is if you're able to do something like this and you remember to do this, other than actually taking a nice deep breath in, because when you're stressed, you're panting. It's very unconscious. Your brain isn't even getting enough oxygen, neither are your lungs. And so if you could just do that and hold it in and recognize what is happening. Now, everything is on heat when you're stressed. Your whole body feels very hot. How do you cool down something when it's on heat? You open it up and you just let it breathe out, right? If you have a pressure cooker, you release it. How do you release your own body? Breathing. So deep breath, and you hold it for 4 seconds. It's called box breathing, and then you just release it. Doesn't matter if you're on a job site and you're a male, because no one will even notice what's going on. If anything, you're now more calmer and people don't have to worry about how you're going to deal with them if you're in an angry state, let's call it. And then you just do that a few times. Your whole body, your nervous system will naturally calm itself down. A third tool that you could use, and I love this one, is one of my favorites, is emotional freedom technique, which is tapping. If you're not in front of anyone, you don't feel too shy to do this, or you're in your space of home, just top of your head, I'm feeling extremely stressed. So now we're talking about what is going on. I'm reassuring myself that I know and I'm connected with you and I'm here with you and I'm feeling this. You just tap through it. You know, I feel really stressed. I'm overwhelmed. I don't feel good enough. I feel this. Express all the negative stuff. Bring it all out into the open. Because when you're saying it out loud, you're also reintegrating and hearing it, but then you're shifting it. I will choose to let this go. It's not worth it. Anything, just anything. You don't have to say, I have let it go. Don't put yourself and bullcrap that you've let it go, because you haven't. That is the truth. But you could turn around and reframe it in a way that it sounds so subtle to the brain. It's almost like when you find a child having a tantrum, what do? Do you scream louder so they hear you? Or you just sit down into their level and say, when you're ready, I'll be here. You sit down in their level and you stay regulated so they can calm down. And same with the tapping. Just stay regulated in the position where you're reframing. It's like, okay, this is where I'm at, but, you know, it looks brighter tomorrow. It was good yesterday. Not saying that I'm better now, because you can't lie to a child and say you'll be fine, because they don't feel fine in that moment. And it's the same with you. You're having a human panic attack or a tantrum through the stress. Your body's doing it. It might not show up in other ways, like some people, how they actually have a full-blown panic attack. But stress is a form of that, but it's very internalized, and it shows up in other symptoms, the flustered state, the heat, the quick speech or the slurred speech. It shows up in so many ways. So those three points I would address: self-assessment, coming out of the body, disassociating for a minute, giving yourself that inner advice again, the breathing. And you find a lot of people that smoke and have addictions, and the first thing is, what is it that you're trying to breathe through? That's my first question when I want to quit smoking. I'm just curious, and it becomes a habit anyway. And then the third option is just to tap through it.
Fascinating. Okay, then. So let's go through that and unpack those a little bit. So recognize would be the part where we do the breathing. So we stop. Let's say, for example, feeling stress. Then I recognize. I say, okay, then. So what am I feeling right now? Okay, I'm feeling stressed. I'm feeling frustrated. I'm feeling, I recognize that I'm feeling stressed because I have to do this for this person or that. What about that's making me stressed? Maybe journaling, I'm assuming, or if you're more of a thinker, you're thinking through it. That's the first part, right? Did you want to expand on that a bit?
I think the recognize is the main part, really, Luke, because the more you can recognize and have the ability to expand your language about yourself, it helps you understand you. So if you ever fell into this space again, it'll be so quick to get the answers, as opposed to the first time that you're going through it and you'll be like, I don't know what I'm feeling, because you have people that really don't know. They will turn around and be like, I don't know. I'm my body is stressed. I don't know. That helps them build the ability to expand their language and their circle of dictionary within themselves to apply meaning to what is really going on. And especially in men, because I find a lot of men do not know how to express themselves very well emotionally. And that's a different story for the different reasons. But they will say, I don't know why I'm going through this. Where in fact, they just don't know how to label it very well. And so the recognizing, I think, is very essential to consistently notice, okay, I'm about to blow up. Why? Because 1, 2, 3, 4, really go back, hone into the last few minutes where you were at, where are you now? That recognition helps expand your awareness. When you're in an aware state, you won't feel stressed because you now know your whole surroundings. You're in a 360 view. If you're in that tunnel vision, that's where the stress really sits. It's honed into that one way. But when you have that 360 view, you feel it and sense it from everywhere. Well, yeah, I am stressed. I'm frustrated. I'm annoyed from my partner, my kids, life, financially, whatever it is. Bring it all up. verbal, it's like you can call it verbal vomit with the recognition.
Right. Okay. And then so accept is obviously once you get that out there, you accept that, that you're feeling that. You, is there more to that or is that pretty straightforward?
I think it's self-explanatory. Accept the fact that what you're experiencing is natural for you and for your current body and your state and all your history put together. What is unnatural is if you didn't understand that that's what your experience was and what you've just recognized through that experience, that becomes unnatural because you're choosing now not to accept it, and then that behavior might show up more often, which is the stress state. And so when you accept it and you recognize it, it's a natural effect that you're acknowledging where you're at, which means now I can take responsibility and place some actions into place so I can repair it where I'm at physically.
Okay, then. And so imagine, I'm assuming that could be, underneath imagine could be the reframe. It could be, so what possibilities are there in the situation? Could be one question, I imagine. The second question might be, what is the story I want to tell around this? Is there anything else that you would add to that, or would you object to those two questions?
No, definitely. I could expand a little bit what story and where is this coming from, just to tap in and just consistently take the time and give yourself the time to really expand on your answers. Where did they even come from? Is that mine, or is it borrowed, or was it planted? And the reason why I say this, because if it was borrowed or planted, it might be things that you actually don't want to have moving forward. So when you expand on these questions that you just were asking, it's more a self-assessment and awareness, because a lot of times we collect things along our journey and we don't want to keep them. Look, we don't want to keep everything, but we think we have to keep it because that's all we know. It's our old programming. And so when you keep expanding on these questions, all you're doing is loosening up your model of understanding yourself.
Absolutely. An example of this is, there's a belief that I have is that I'm not responsible for anyone's emotions. That's a belief that I've had, and I changed that recently to, I do play a part in someone's experience, but ultimately at the end, I'm not entirely responsible for that. I can help them, I can support them, I can facilitate them. That's what I'm playing with at the moment. And how that manifests sometimes in the past, when it's like, I'm not responsible for someone's emotions, very closed off, very rigid. How it manifests is that when someone came to me with something that I didn't like, or, you know, if I'm over it, I'll just be like, shut down, not interested, you do it yourself kind of thing. And again, there's all these stories that we have around beliefs and identity and so forth. But one of the stories that I added to that, and perhaps I'm doing this unconsciously, as in I'm adding them in over time because I'm reading and learning things and challenging myself. But one of them is, when my partner's triggered or when someone's triggered, rather than saying, oh, I have to deal with this, I'm not responsible to their emotions, it turns to, oh, wow, I have the opportunity to help them to regulate. I have an opportunity to help them to regulate their emotions, to help them move through this. I've been chosen for this. I've been given the gift to help this person regulate. And that doesn't mean that there's codependence where you're, you know, you become the source of their emotional regulation. Obviously, you have boundaries and things like that. The nuance is there. But the story is that I have the opportunity. And the way that, and I intentionally had this story a few days ago, and the way I entered a conversation, which I would typically be like closed off and, you know, kind of like guarded, it was like, oh, okay, well, how can I help? What can I do? How do you feel? Like, it's just this openness and this, rather than a compression, it was an expansion. And I think that's what responsibility is. You know, it's being able to take on, quote unquote, more problems, or responsibilities is a better word, and be grateful for them because you have the capacity. And as opposed to, and this happens a lot in I guess the spiritual space, where whether it be across the world or in subcults of ways of thinking, which is have boundaries, you have strong boundaries, and that is a proxy for some people of, I can't handle your emotions, or I'm an avoidant. My attachment style is that I'm avoidant. Whereas it's like, it's opportunity. It doesn't mean that you lose yourself in someone else's reality, but it does mean that you're able to hold space for someone, and holding space for someone is a beautiful gift.
100%. No, that's you put that so nicely. And it's nice to see that being on the masculine end of things, you're able to open up that rigid state and recognize it and say, you know, I put my hand up. This is what I was doing. And this is now what I'm doing. And I think that's beautiful. And you said it so beautifully. And I think it takes a lot of empathy for a human being to turn around and say, hey, what's going on? Can I help you out? As opposed to taking it so personal and saying, he did, she did, made me feel, right? Playing that victim. It's just actually, let's switch it for a minute. It's not about me. You're going through something. And whatever that something, if it's offending me, it's also not about me. It's something's going on for you. And you reflect the mirror a little bit differently. And your perception has changed towards it. And I think it puts you in a better position as a human being, as an empath, and somebody that wants to serve humanity, especially in your field of practice as well as mine. And I feel that we only grow every day and we're always adding more additions of how we can hold or carry a space for people, as opposed to having that rigid box, lack of ability to have that flexible personality. I think it's beautiful to have that openness. And all it comes down to, and this could just be my own opinion, but when you're taking things to heart, and things too personal, that's where the rigidness comes up. That's where the boundaries show up. That's where the aggression might show up. That's where the victim mentality might come up, or the prosecution of dealing with a situation, as opposed to the flip side of that. When something comes up that might affect you from some history of yours, you've heard this before or made you felt uncomfortable, you actually sit with it again, similar to the first scenario we're talking about, the stress levels, and being in the third person saying, what's going on with me? Real quickly, let me regulate myself enough, as rapid as I can, to help this person, because clearly they're not in a good state. And so now it's not about me anymore, but I notice that it could, or it is affecting me at some degree. I clean that up quickly enough to carry their space. Because in life, look, we all need connection. Luke, we need each other. Without each other, we have no one. And we're humans. We need that constant checking in and the love and the affection and how are we? And are you okay? Really, are you okay? All these things play a part just to keep us going. And it gives us the ability to teach us also to continue to drive ourselves through the things that we want and the challenges that are appearing, as opposed to always being the passenger. And so it's up to us to carry spaces, I think, really well. And I really like what you were just saying before. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I think to add that as well, we don't have... I find the Western model of thinking about the world very interesting. Not that I believe, and I'm not talking about politically, you know, democracy versus autocracy or whatever, but I find it very interesting. Individuality, right? The word is almost it falls on itself in a way. And obviously you need the word because it points, like the finger points the moon. It's not the moon itself, it's just the finger pointing the moon. But we live in and around people. And, you know, meaning the emotions that we express and who we are towards someone lives in someone, and who we are towards the world is an expression of who we are, and that lives within us, and then so on and so on. So there's no reality in where we're separate, and that's separation is the cause of a lot of things that we suffer from. And, you know, the strong boundaries or the I'm not responsible or whatever it might be, that's just a little kid inside saying, I don't want to be enmeshed by you, you know, because I was enmeshed in my childhood or whatever it might mean. And that's all that really is. And really? I think that's really crucial when it comes to the A, that's recognizing, two, accepting that's part of your past. And that's your, as they would say in some spiritual dimensions or realities, that's my Dharma. That's what I'm supposed to be here for, to work through. And then imagining something better than that. And the imagining can be the reframe. It can be the understanding. So I think we've hit all three there. Is there anything you want to add to those?
No, I wouldn't say anything to add, but I would expand a little bit more on individuality. And yeah, there is, we're not talking about political aspects of things in individuality itself, but the fact that the Western has honed into it, in my belief, is more so you haven't honed into it, you've boxed everyone. And people have chosen to be in this box. And that box consists of also just looking into one item, which is, let's call it your phone, which disconnects you once again from actual human experience. And without human experience, you don't have human ability to connect on a deeper level. And that's what this world and our current community is lacking. And it's only getting worse by the minute, unfortunately. And so it's just reaching out and just reminding people, without people, we have no consumers. Without people, we cannot reproduce. without people, we cannot even exist. So we need one another. We need each other. We need the love, the empathy, the connection. Because without all of that, we have nothing. We have nothing. And it's great to become a part of a pack or a community. Maybe not a toxic one. Maybe not the one that you went up through, the one that you grew up in. Maybe not the religious one that doesn't align with your current values. That's fine. But we need some community, because without it, we are lost within ourselves. And to be lost within yourself is a dreadful way to live, because you're no longer living. You're dead inside.
A lot of Australian men do. And it's like, she'll be right. No, I'm all right. I'm all good. No, no worries. I'm okay. No, I'm all right. I'm all good.
But really, are you?
Years later, they have skin cancer.
Yeah, well, there you go. Look at that. Look at that. But yeah.
So what are we going to say?
I was just saying it's just one of those things. It's one of those things.
Well, I really appreciate you joining. Where can people find you? Where can they go to learn more about you if they want to work with you online or offline? Where can they head to?
They could type out my name on Google and they'll instantly find me, or you could find it under our company name, Beyond NLP Coaching, or www.beyondnlpcoaching.com.au. My services are shown up there, one-on-one therapy. We do mentoring and coaching as well. And then we run beautiful workshops. We hone down a lot with women, but also for therapists, and we can certify therapists and you get your CPD points. So Beyond NLP Coaching pretty much provides a lot of services to the local community and the outer community via what is it called? Like the Zoom link and all of that sort of thing that now we have running. Yeah. The online processes. So yeah, we've got a lot of things. So if you are interested to find out more and what I could do to potentially help you out with anything, then just please reach out. You can call our office and we could go from there.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Kamo. It's been a pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you, Luke. Really appreciate it.